Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. There is a sense of change in the air. The belief in long-held social and political pieties are questioned and even rejected. Boomer ideas, in power for over a half century, are being rejected by younger generations. The world they are inheriting is broken and with few prospects. Crosstalking the generational divide, I'm joined by my guest, Ethan Livens in South Carolina. He's an independent social media journalist. In Rome, we have Dr. Zarifa Barood. She is a Palestinian activist who has spent years working with Palestinian groups in the United States. And in Prague, we cross to Jason Zahadas. He is an independent journalist and geopolitical analyst. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Ethan, if I can go to you first here, I'm sure right before we sat down to convene this program, you checked your stock listings, right? I mean, is it up, down? I mean, or, you know, maybe you're scheduling a call with your broker after this program. I mean, that's a very boomer approach to how boomers see the world, but I don't think you see it that way. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I woke up, I checked my Palantir and Dow Jones stock. That's the most important thing in my life. It's totally not groceries and milk and gas prices. You know, I'm 21 years old. I don't think that my Roth IRA is really at the top of my list right now. And it isn't for anyone my age. You know, we're focused on how we can live day to day. How cheap is our DoorDash? How cheap is the milk? I have to go to the grocery store after this. Not looking forward to that. And, you know, just to kind of zoom it out, a lot of people are making a lot of money right now, especially with the war in Iran. But those people that are making money, it's not me and it's not anybody, especially under the age of 30. Look, I'm 21 and all of my friends are around my age. And the only thing we're worried about is gas prices. How can we go drive around to football games, to soccer games, to baseball games? And it doesn't seem like any of the politicians really worried about that, because obviously gas prices don't affect Donald Trump, don't affect the Trump family, don't affect any of the millionaires in D.C., but it affects normal people. It especially affects people like me who are young, who are trying to figure out what to eat for lunch today without looking at a $20 hamburger. So, yeah, the stocks aren't really on my priority list this morning.
Zarifa, essentially the same question to you. I mean, I know of your father's background and activity and yours as well, and I think it's commendable, and I want to talk a little bit about that later. But just what are your prospects, okay? Obviously, you've worked hard in life. You are a PhD. How is that helping you with your real-life expectations?
I think it's a really interesting time. I think I have recently completed my PhD in Palestine studies, and entering this academic landscape that's been really forever altered by the ongoing genocide in Gaza and by the United States' reaction to said genocide and to their complicity in this genocide. I think that it's interesting walking into academia in this moment.
But I mean, it's very interesting because when I was growing up, it was the end of the Vietnam War, and that was a catalyst for major social change in the United States. And we haven't had very many moments like that since then. The events going on in Palestine, the genocide, has galvanized people, and that is a good thing. But Jason, would you consider your generation ideological? And if it is ideological, how would you describe it?
I would say that the younger generation is definitely far more politically aware in many respects than some of the older generations still living in the United States. And yes, I would say that definitely leads them to be far more ideological. And that stems not just from the major divide that exists between Gen Z and the older generations, but also the dynamic that currently exists in U.S. politics between the ruling classes and I guess you could say the working people who make up the industrial backbone of the American economy. So the latter one of those kind of manifests itself in the form of global banking cartels headquartered on Wall Street, which pull the strings of the presidency and the Congress and rule both the American people and those in foreign countries around the world through the weaponization of debt, the predatory exploitation of resources and cheap labor, and building up massive amounts of artificial wealth through the parasitic extraction of rents enabled through corporate monopolization over real estate industry and even basic things like health and medicine. So over the course of the 20th century and heading into the 21st, the foundations of the global economy shifted primarily from productive industry to rentier-based finance capitalism, especially with the rise of neoliberalism and fueled by the collapse of the communist bloc. That is currently being reflected in the struggles of the younger generations to afford housing or basic necessities. And if we apply that to the U.S. war in the Middle East, the attack on Venezuela, or the Ukraine proxy war, the younger generations are becoming far more understanding of the fact that the same interests that crush them economically also want to turn Russia, Latin America, and Iran into debt slaves of the IMF and World Bank and vassals of the European Union and BlackRock. Another reason why is obviously because they themselves, as am I, by the way, are very appalled to see that the two political parties in the U.S. supported Israel's genocidal rampage in Gaza and Lebanon.
Jason, that's exactly where I wanted to go. So, Ethan, I mean, so, you know, are you looking forward to the midterm elections and the general election in 28? I mean, the political parties in the United States, they hold all the answers, don't they?
It's awful. Nobody is looking forward to the midterms, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. This is so bad. It's been bad forever. I mean, it's been like 50 years of constant ping pong back and forth. Republican, Democrat, prices go up. The wars are constant. You know, here's the thing. The wars in Syria happened under Obama. The Ukraine war happened under Biden. And now this fiasco in Iran is happening under Trump. So if you look at a geopolitical standpoint, you're going to get wars either way. An economic standpoint, you're going to get a bad economy either way. I mean, Biden's economy was pretty bad with the inflation. Trump's economy is even worse with the inflation. Look at gas prices. You know, I'm not excited for the midterms. I don't think anybody's really excited for the midterms. It's just, this is really bad. I hate to, like, be real simple and a Debbie Downer, but I'm not even voting, if that makes
if you can't affect change, then why vote? I mean, that's quite
100%,
obvious. 100%. Okay, Zarifa, what is also very disturbing is that the genocide in Gaza started under, at least this phase of it, under Biden, and it was continued under Trump. This is the third term of Bush-Cheney, or as is often said, no matter what when you do vote, you always get John McCain. So what's the point in voting? You don't have you can never get a desirable outcome. And there can be no insurgents. You know, in the Democratic Party, you can't have an insurgent. They have super delegates, and it's already done. They don't have, look, you know, Kamala Harris. Who voted for her? Nobody. Okay. All right. So, I mean, you know, this is the problem here, is that why have electoral politics if your vote doesn't count?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to be the right person to come on here and advocate for electoral politics. but I think that my perspective.
Well, dear, I don't think anyone here is advocating that. Okay, I think we're all in agreement. Keep going.
I think that my perspective as a young person, as someone that lives in the United States, is really representative of the majority of young people in the United States. Who have really become disillusioned by establishment traditional politics over the last few years, especially. We've seen public opinion, and I think that my generation has seen public opinion in an unprecedented manner shift towards sympathy and support for Palestine, and complete disapproval and condemnation of not only Israel, but the United States's continued complacency and participation in the Israeli occupation and genocidal regime. Yet we've also simultaneously witnessed absolutely no change happening within this electoral politics or this establishment traditional politics, which I think has disillusioned people, but I think in a very productive way, because we've seen young people becoming mobilized directly and materially in a way that they haven't been before, especially this generation that older generations might have discredited for, I don't know, always being on their phones or being obsessed with TikTok or on Instagram. But rather, these platforms have been used as political weapons to radicalize and to politicize this generation that are more willing than ever to put their own lives and livelihood on the line to stand against the complicity of their own governments.
Well, Zarifa, let me go to Jason here. Well, why wouldn't you do that? What other alternative do you have? The electoral process doesn't benefit you whatsoever. Your economic prospects are not very bright. I mean, why not go for broke? I agree with Zarifa completely. Go ahead, Jason.
Well, actually, interestingly enough, speaking of just like the rejection of voting and the rejection of electoralism and stuff like that, if you look at polling data, it consistently shows that the issues that are of most primary concern to younger voters in the United States are these unique challenges that they're facing with multiplying debt, the cost of housing and basic necessities, finding secure jobs that will pay them enough to live even just a basic and normal life. Meanwhile, on matters related to foreign policy, there is a massive decline in support for foreign aid and military spending, as well as larger skepticism of weaponized political alliances like NATO in the use of the military to essentially be the global police in the world and seek unnecessary confrontation with foreign countries like Russia, Iran, Venezuela, the genocide in Gaza. And by the way, they understand that these countries' only crime in the eyes of Washington was to pursue a path of geopolitical and economic independence from the U.S. Treasury, as well as both national and regional sovereignty within their respective corners of the globe.
Or more simply put, they said no, okay? They said no in the name of sovereignty. All right, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the generational divide. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing the generational divide. Okay, let's go back to Ethan in South Carolina. I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, Donald Trump started opining about the threats of communism, which really kind of took me aback because that was what they did on my generation. You know, the communists are under every single bed. Don't turn off your light. They're out to get us. The Russians are coming, et cetera, et cetera. Ethan, when you heard that, how did it strike you? Because I just thought it was kind of a blast from the past. Go ahead.
I thought it was hilarious, and I knew it would be memed very immediately. Like, communism, are we serious? It's just a new buzzword. Next, it's socialist, it's communist, it's transgender for everybody. I mean, they're funny. It's funny when he says this stuff. But it's just a new buzz scare word. I promise America is not going to turn communist. Russia's not even communist anymore. So never like my boomer grandpa, that's a little mean, but whenever he starts lecturing me like, Ethan, your videos, you need to stop talking about Russia. They're communists. And I'm like, look, Yeltsin was like 30 years ago. I thought he reversed all of that. It's this like boomer scare, and I hate to keep saying boomer, Peter. I apologize.
No. I am the first to admit that my generation screwed up the world more than any other generation in the history of humanity. I stand guilty as charged. Okay, it's fine. Keep going.
Yeah, so it's this older generation that's just throwing buzzwords at the younger generation because we're starting to think for ourselves, we're starting to have new ideas, and we're drifting away from the status quo where I'm a right-wing guy, but I'm no longer a Republican. I'm no longer MAGA. I'm no longer going to vote just because somebody's a Republican. So both sides of the aisle, by the way, are throwing new buzzwords out. How dare you even think that way? Are you a All right, Trump called Chuck Schumer a Palestinian like a year ago, like that was some derogatory term. Now it's communist, democratic, socialist. They call on the left, they call people bigots, they call fascists. It's both sides. It's vocabulary war. It's a culture war. And now the revamping of the new communist idea. Trump said he would be a great communist. Okay. So it's just constant vocabulary war. And then he throws it back on himself. I'm just very confused right now. I don't even know how to analyze this anymore, especially with Trump in office. Well, but it's just another culture war.
Well, I was hoping all three of you would help me understand. Zarifa, let me go to you on a more serious note here. Because of the awareness of the genocide in Gaza that is continuing to this day here. And that was an awakening for so many people. And I must admit, over the years on this program, I was pretty derisive against your generation, blue hair, you know, videos, living in your mom's basement, all that. I'm guilty of doing that. But when I saw the rise of the consciousness about what was going on in Gaza, yeah, I was truly amazed. And it was a younger generation that did it. But what I would also, you can extrapolate from there, is that we heard the lies from all these Western governments saying, no, that's not happening, and Israel has the right to self-defense, and all this other nonsense. What the extrapolation is if you're lying about a genocide, then what else are you lying about? And I think your generation is feeling that way. What else are you lying about?
Absolutely. I think that this generation that saw and witnessed everything that happened in Gaza is also the generation that witnessed the Black Lives Matter movement. It's the generation that witnessed a violent resurrection of an immigration policy that happened under Obama and under Trump and under Biden as well. I think that also this generation, don't forget, witnessed their faculty and their fellow students, yes, being brutalized by police during peaceful protests, protesting that their universities divest from a genocidal foreign regime. So I think that this really burst the bubble for a lot of young people that prepared them to better deal with and understand the true nature of the United States' imperialist policy as per any country, particularly with Iran. I think that Gaza made them more well-equipped to deal with Trump's current policy and approach towards Iran with 85%, according to recent polls, of young people usually under like 30 years old, 18 to 30 years old, disapproving of Trump's actions in Iran and strikes on Iran, with the approval rating being the absolute minority, around 15%. So I think that what Trump and Biden and their ilk created was a generation that has been, the veil has been lifted in a lot of ways.
You know, Jason, I mean, it was interesting because Ethan told us, you know, he's like myself, he's a conservative, but I have nothing to do with the Republican Party, and I haven't for a very, very long time. And it was interesting. It was in 2016, that election, that the two major figures were Trump and Bernie Sanders, and I followed both of them because it was a little bit different, okay? We didn't realize how different it would be here. But I think that, you know, that was a turning point because people are looking for an alternative. Obviously, Bernie was thwarted, and Donald Trump ended up being like any George Bush. No difference here. So, I mean, is your generation just done with ideology?
Well, I will say, I will also say that while Bernie was thwarted, he also sold out himself.
Yeah,
too,
agreed.
But also, the younger generation. I think it's like 70% of those under 50, with overwhelming representation among those under 30, now support the idea of a third party because they understand that the avaricious private interests within the within the Wall Street banking cartels and the military-industrial complex are the ones who pull the strings in the White House and the halls of Congress, no matter who the president is or which party is in power. The oligarchs are the ones who reap the benefits of endless war. As we saw in a recent report, by the way, from Oxfam International, which showed that the oil conglomerates saw their profits increase by $23.5 billion thanks to rampant inflation in the global energy market, while the war in Iran will cause another 32 million to fall into poverty across the globe by the end of 2026. And then, of course, there's the $195 billion that Lockheed Martin and BlackRock are making off of arms contracts related to the Ukraine proxy war and the Kiev regime's NATO-backed terrorist attacks in Russia. You know, this kind of this brings me back to that interview with Vladimir Putin, where he said that he had spoken to multiple U.S. presidents who come in with new ideas and they campaign on things like ending the permanent war economy or reining in the power of the national security state. And then the people who are wearing dark suits and carrying briefcases arrive to explain how everything is done. And Ralph Nader also famously said that the only difference between the two parties is the velocity at which their knees hit the ground when a donor enters the room. This is only going to get worse, though, as the global economic crises caused by Trump's war of aggression in Iran, the genocide in Gaza, and the NATO proxy war in Ukraine force Americans to choose between putting gas in the car or putting food on the table, while the FBI and Palantir work overtime to censor journalists and activists and designate them as terrorists. We saw with Julian Assange, Chris Halali, Jackson Hinkle, and the pro-Palestine protesters of 2024.
You know, Ethan, a third party was mentioned. You know what? I'm not a party guy, but if there... I could see myself easily being in a party with a lot of left progressives, because a lot of real conservatives, we have a convergence there. That's why they will never let a third party, because all of us disenfranchised, all of us politically homeless might gravitate there, and they're terrified of that. Ethan.
No, 100%. And Peter, I will say, if you want to have a party, I'm more than willing to host, but to be serious about it.
No, I will be party leader emeritus. You guys run it, okay? There you go, okay.
I have a very bleak look on the future of the U.S. Everybody wants to talk about the young generation and how it's changing. I'm sure everybody thought that after Vietnam with the hippie movement. I'm sure everybody thought that after the Iraq War. Here we are with Iran again. And I've come to the conclusion to myself that nothing is really ever going to change. Why would the Democratic Party allow somebody to run for them that is good? Why would the Republican Party allow somebody to run for them that is going to change everything? Because the second that somebody takes a sledgehammer to this whole operation of two parties back and forth, everything comes crumbling down. There will never be a third party. It's not set up that way. Congress is not set up that way. The debates are not set up that way. They have strict standards for a reason. Fox News and CNN are funded by the Republicans and Democrats. Why in the world could ever, I would hope so, but I don't think it could ever happen, a third party, genuine independent ever get in. They pushed out Tulsi Gabbard. They pushed out Bernie Sanders. And the only way that you can even get your foot in the door, like Gabbard did, was to change up your policies just to get basically booted out. Just like Bernie Sanders changed up his policies. The Democrats wanted nothing to do with him, even in 2020. I just truthfully don't think there's any correct way out of this, maybe for another 40, 50 years. And a third party at this point looks so distant, given that the reality is that most Americans still, you know, 30 upwards, don't really care too much about politics. They vote simply whenever the elections come around. You know, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat. Yeah,
But would you pass that off is that because they're economically comfortable, that they're economically satisfied, that they can ride out, you know, it's inflation here and there. I mean, the status quo works for those people.
It does, and they're also busy with other things. I mean, the American economy, straight up, compared to other countries, it's a pretty good economy. The cost of living is rising, but it's still doable. People are able to live, and I think until there is a drastic drop-off I think for the next maybe few decades, even 10 years, that's a long time, the status quo is just going to maintain itself.
You know
people
what?
Are too but, worried about other things.
I wanted to stay away from the war in Iran because I do it every single week after week after week. given the way the direction of that war, the drastic change that you are talking about might happen a lot faster than you think. We'll have to see. All right, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Rome, Prague, and in South Carolina. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.